comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. Do you remember last week I did a show where I presented some allegedly new information. Well, it's new information about the Baltic Sea object, and the question is it real information? Is it genuine, or is it hoaxed? And that's what the show was about, examining that, presenting it to you, examining it, and just going through, all of the points of, we can see this, this, and this, and that points to it being hoaxed. We can see this, this, and this, and that seems to point to it being real. What do you think? And of course, we had internet gurus who don't listen respond to things that weren't said, but that's normal in the mindless mushroom masses, but one of our members, and look, the debate is active and alive among Kevin Smith Show members. Some of the members think it's real. Some of the members think it's hoaxed. And the discussion and the debate's going on in our forums. And I don't know. I don't know whether it's real. I don't know whether it's hoaxed. But one of our members emailed the Ocean X team, that is the team of treasure hunters who discovered this object and who did the side scan sonar. And what's under debate is the new information is a side scan, it's alleged to be a side scan sonar image that shows something quite different. And the debate is, well, is that real or is it hoaxed? So one of our members emailed the Ocean X team and simply asked them, is this real or is it hoaxed? And there was a very curious response. That member has posted that response in the forums. Be sure you get in there and take a look at it and see if you don't find the response to be curious as well. Very curious, I think. We publish every week something called the K-Files. It is our free weekly newsletter, and I want you to be getting it. Furthermore, you need to be getting it. If you're not getting it, then you're in the dark. And it's a good publication. We've been publishing that for 12 years now, and most of the people who are subscribed and who subscribed back then in the beginning are still with us. Very few people ever cancel, but you can anytime you want to. You can just cancel your subscription. And, we keep that email list simply for us. We don't distribute that to anybody else. So get over to the website and subscribe to the K-Files if you haven't. We'll take a break. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. John Vasquez is my guest this evening, and let me just go ahead and welcome John. John, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Folks, John Vasquez now for 10 years or so has been telling the world about an event, an incident that happened to him and a bunch of other guys at Fort Benning back in the 1970s. He's written a book about it. It's called Incident at Fort Benning. That book has been out for some time now. And I want to just kind of get you up to speed a little bit before we dive into tonight's show, because there is some additional information about this that you need to know about. But when John first began telling this account, there was no corroboration of it. He was a lone voice in the wilderness. And it takes a brave man to stand up and say, look, this happened, I was there, I saw it, and you can't get anybody else to stand up with you. That takes some courage, and it takes some real determination, and I know, because I've now been dealing with this story and with John for several years now, I know that he's got the dedication. And he has stuck to the story. He has stuck to his guns, so to speak. And he's been out there as a lone voice for a long time. The incident that he talks about, the incident that he tells us about, happened, he says, in 1977. He says it happened at Fort Benning. And we'll get into some details of it in just a moment, but a thumbnail sketch of it. He was there for some training, and he was in the Army at the time, and he there was a UFO incident, and this incident resulted in a battle, a firefight between the UFO and the Army personnel who were there. Now, a lot of people I know ask the question, did this really happen? I mean, it's a fantastic story. It's a story that would make a fantastic movie plot. So did this really happen? And that's one of the problems that he's had over the years, is facing that very serious and frankly entrenched doubt as to whether it really happened or not. And not just among the professional debunkers and skeptics and disinformation artists, but also in the UFO field. We're all just a little bit gun shy, aren't we? We hear something and people think the truth depends on a majority vote. You know, well, why haven't I ever heard of this before? Why isn't anybody else talking about it? The truth is the truth, even if it has no majority vote. Now, I'm not saying, I want you to understand, I'm not saying that what John is talking about, that I know for sure it's true. I wasn't there. I don't think he's lying to us, but I wasn't there. I can't prove to you that it's true, and that's not my purpose here. But I do want you to disabuse yourself of the idea that the truth requires a majority vote. I mean, just look at our own politics and our own nation and ask yourself how much truth is there in that, and they all got there with a majority vote. So the truth doesn't depend on a majority vote. Finally, after a long, long time of standing all by himself, a guy by the name of Command Sergeant Major James Norton stood up and went public and said, it is true, I was there, I was in that battle, I was wounded too, And I remember John because I helped him get out of the truck when they took us, the wounded, back to the AIDS station to be treated. And so he stood up and said, yeah, it's true. And he told, a pretty fantastic story, just like John has told us, and a few extra details of, you know, what he saw and experienced. And then a lot of people were asking the question, is his story true? It just sounds too fantastic. So we started out with one voice and people saying, well, how come we're not hearing from anybody else that was there? Then we hear from somebody else that's there and people say, well, there's only two people talking about it. And this could go on forever. If we get up to 100 people, they'll be saying, well, there are thousands of people out there at the base. How come only 100 people are saying they saw this? That's the way that majority, truth by majority philosophy works, and it actually doesn't work. See, the whole majority of science at one time and the majority of the world said this planet was flat. Did that make it true? The majority said that people who claimed the earth was round were lunatics. The majority said they were lunatics. Did that make that true? So disabuse yourself of this notion. It is absolutely a spurious notion. So the truth is the truth. It stands on its own two feet. Doesn't matter how many people believe it, don't believe it. Whether you believe it or not won't change whether it's true or not. Now, the same thing works in reverse. If this story is not true, it doesn't matter how strongly you believe it, it won't make it true. So what we're after is to try and discover the truth. Well, James Norton stood up and told his side of this story, and then within about 6 months, James Norton mysteriously died. The circumstances of his death are quite mysterious. Very mysterious. And then we had people, we had a person who claimed to be his friend for 20 years that wrote to me and said, well, look, James Norton never was in the military. And he just liked to tell big stories. This person claimed to be his friend for 20 years. Later, that same person came out and said he was in the military and I served with him. So there's been a lot of mystery about this. There's been a lot of eye-raising mystery about this. It's been very difficult to get anybody to talk about it. And I know because I have talked to, personally, one of the people who should be a witness and will tell you what he told me in just a few minutes. John, how do you keep going? How do you stay after this, day after day after day, trying to get witnesses to come forward when you have had so many years of basically being kicked in the teeth on this? How do you do it?
Well, being consistent.
Well, I know you're consistent. How? And why do you keep going when it seems like after all this time, you know, you can't get these people to stand up and say, yeah, I was there.
There's a lot of information out there about Fort Benning, and I stayed with one fact and a truth, and I continued with that. And slowly, it takes time to find the friends and people who was involved in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it works. I'm in a situation right now at this time, and I find more information just evolving around this incident.
Well, you know, I think most people who are listening to us right now would not have stayed after this for 10 years like you have. So I commend you for staying after it. For one thing, that speaks pretty loudly for the fact that you're telling us the truth as you know the truth, and otherwise you wouldn't stay after this. The James Norton episode in this is extremely mysterious, and after he died, you came on the air. In fact, you're the person who informed me that he had died. You're the person that told me that James Norton had died, and you told me some of the circumstances behind his death. Very, very strange, mysterious circumstances. And you came on the air, and we talked about it here on the air. I really thought at that point, John, I thought, well, we'll have to see, but I wonder if John will give up now. What went through your mind when that happened?
Well, actually, when I heard about James passing away, I really felt that the information he had is true, first of all. So I worked on it and tried to investigate more to it, the background of this information about James passing out, or passing away, I'm sorry. And I gathered all the information I could, and finding that he made another statement about the metal pieces that he found. And unfortunately, he puts himself in a corner, actually, with that a statement that he made about the metal pieces, because the metal pieces that he was talking about was alien metal pieces. When in doubt, that it was just name tags, regular name tags that all of us carried around our necks. And the strangest part is that metal pieces that all of us had wearing this around our neck started to glow. So we all of us took it off and we buried it somewhere out in the field. We didn't know what happened. Well, we really didn't know what was going on at that time. And as for James Norton is concerned, I just hope he has that metal piece that he once was talking about still. Because I have no idea what he did with that.
Yeah, nobody knows what happened to the metal pieces that he was talking about. All right. Now, for those of you who are not up to speed on James Norton, Command Sergeant Major James Norton, and you're not up to speed on this incident at Fort Benning, let me suggest a couple of things. First of all of the James Norton videos of our shows with him. We did 3 shows with him, and then 1 show with John Vasquez after James Norton died, where we talked about the circumstances of his death. The videos of all of those are in our video galaxy in the members community. And so all of you who are members, if you're not up to speed on all of that, watch those videos and it'll bring you up to speed. This is one of the most astounding, one of the most fantastic stories in the field of UFOs. The story is that in September of, in 1977, there were 2 incidents that John experienced at Fort Benning. That's his story. And these incidents involved UFOs. So the first incident happened when, John?
The first incident happened on September 2nd, 1977.
All right, and the next one was on September 16th, right?
The second was around September 16th,
okay.
1977.
Okay, so on September the 2nd, what was the incident? Give it to us in a quick thumbnail sketch. What was the incident that happened on September 2nd, 1977?
We were out in a formation, mandatory formation. It was about 1,300 men out there. We were supposed to have this parade formation because our company commanders wanted to talk to us about this training course we're about to complete within 6 to 8 months. And during our formation, it was about 1,300 men out there, we suddenly saw an unusual white light descending on us. And we panicked, of course, and it's like a chaos of people just running everywhere. And many of us ran to the trees, hid underneath the barracks, pretty much frightened about what this thing was, because it was just coming around us like it was cruising and looking for something, and it was looking for us.
How big was it?
I'm sorry?
How big was it?
Yeah, well, as far as what I understand right now, it was just about the size of a, what I had earlier information, and I had to clear that, but it was about...
Well, you remember what you saw. How big was it?
Well, it was about 600 feet long.
Okay, so it was substantial. So the 600-foot-long object, now, did it have a bright light, or was it a light itself? Was it lit all the way?
It had sort of a bluish white light to it.
Yeah, my question is the bluish white light coming from a light, like a headlight, or is it the whole object is this color?
It was the whole object. It was just descending on us.
Okay. And so it lit. This is nighttime, and it lights up the parade ground, and everybody starts running. And what happened?
Well, everybody was finally was so scared about what looking at this and trying to escape from whatever it is. Suddenly, we were taken aboard. We were just taken aboard, each and every one of us.
1,300 men.
Yes.
Okay, so 1,300 U.S. soldiers taken aboard. Do you know what happened on board?
We were examined one by one. We were taken to the other rooms. I saw Sergeant Santini in the same, it was like a metal slab that we're all of us lying on. I just saw
that. Alright, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back. We'll pick up that story right after we come back.
And you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show, a place where you can get information that's out of this world.
Welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, John Vasquez. And we're talking about this... incident, actually two separate incidents, at Fort Benning that John has written about and for years now has been talking about on radio shows, and he's been on this show a number of times talking about. There's some new information we'll be presenting to you here tonight. John, as we went away for break, I had asked for a thumbnail sketch of what happened in this first incident, and you told me that this 600-foot glowing blue object descended over 1,300 men in formation on the parade grounds at Fort Benning, and everybody was taken on board. How was everybody rounded up if they were all running? How did that happen?
They were gathered like cattle. And we're taken up to this craft. Yes, a huge craft, and there was each person was handed one on the left side, and the other one on the right side, and we were taken up to this craft.
Okay, so did the craft land, or were you beamed up?
I'm sorry, what was that again?
Did the craft land, or were you beamed aboard?
We were pretty much beamed aboard. It didn't land; it was beamed aboard. We were like being lifted up.
Okay.
So
on board the craft, they did medical examinations.
Yes, we were gone through all kinds of medical examination by all of them, or at least their staff. I'm calling them staff. By their staff, and they weren't the person that was in charge with the whole operation was this female, which I didn't see, but I remember after myself going through all kinds of examination, she pointed her finger at me and told me to go back to sleep.
And did you go back to sleep?
Yes, I did, and within an hour, I believe, I was taken to another room where there was a male sitting or standing there in front of me and asking me to open my eyes, and I didn't want to. I refused because I didn't know who he was or what he was, because a strange looking being, large head, stringy hairs, thin face.
How tall? Eyes. How tall were they?
They're about 5'4".
Okay.
About 5'4", yeah.
But they didn't look like the typical gray aliens, huh?
Well, yeah, they were grayish.
Mm-hmm.
Light grayish.
But they had hair.
Kind of stringy hair, like a thin hair.
Mm-hmm.
Real thin hair.
Okay, and then after they did these medical tests, what, they put all you guys back in your barracks or what?
Well, after that was over, we were actually starting to wake up, and all of us were back in formation again, waking up, and we're pretty groggy. Remember seeing one of the sergeants tell us to walk back to the barracks, and I was complaining what happened to the speech to the captain. We haven't heard any speeches at all because I remember him saying that we are going to have a speech for this training course. That never happened. So one of the sergeant told us to walk back to our barracks, which all of us did, and a lot of us fell down, lost our balance. Walked back again, and our watches stopped. So we walked back to our barracks, and going back to our barracks, we noticed a lot of the men were acting strange. They all were having some sort of bizarre behavior, and a lot of them was being odd about a lot of things that were up there in the barracks. So it was just
okay. Describe that for us. What do you mean they were being odd?
Well, the behavior was very odd because a lot of the guys would get up and scream out loud for no reason, and others were pointing their finger at the wall, screaming they see something, a face or something like that, and the other people were just one of them was a. Did a really odd thing also. He urinated on in his locker for no apparent reason. And we had to stop him and tell him, you're doing something wrong here.
Okay.
And we stopped that right away.
So how long did this odd behavior continue?
I'm sorry, what was that?
How long did this odd behavior continue?
It continued until like from 7:30 at night when our formation started until about 4:45 in the morning.
And then things just began to settle down into normal?
Somewhat, somewhat normal. Some of us went back to sleep, try to get ourselves back sort of our sleep.
All right, so the next day, were the guys talking about it?
Well, next day about 10:30, about 10 o'clock, I woke up and I was late for breakfast, which I never was, but I found out I was late. I went downstairs and in a back building, there was a picnic table that all of us sit down and talk to each other at times. And I walked up to many of the guys back there and they were all sitting around in daze, like, they can't remember something, or they're looking at each other like they don't know who all of us were.
So they weren't talking about it, but they were all sort of still in a daze.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Did anybody ever address this issue with you? Did any of the sergeants or above ever talk about this and say, look, forget it, it didn't happen?
And the sergeant never showed up. Well, he did show up, but he was back in the officer's building. He never mentioned anything to us. And as for the captain and lieutenants, they all left the base. Actually, there was a skeleton crew left behind.
Okay, so now let's jump forward to September 16th. What happens on September the 16th?
September 16th, we were at one of the training courses, about 3 miles away from our barracks. They set up camp. We were there that night at the campsite.
Okay.
And some of the officers were there, and the NCO was there. Suddenly something happened, unusual happened, and one of the sergeant got upset about what us, because we're building a campfire, and he was kicking campfire at us, and we all got upset because of that. There was no need for that. But then the captain and first sergeant asked an unusual question, like, how intelligent are you? And we responded and said, as intelligent as sending a man to the moon and back. And he said that was fine and kind of got into the Jeep and drove off. So
that's odd, is it not?
I'm sorry?
Isn't that kind of odd? I mean, to drive up and say, how intelligent are you?
Yeah, that was an unusual question to ask, and then we answered it back in a polite way, and he kind of looked at us and walked away with the first sergeant, and he got in the Jeep and drove away.
Okay, so that's weird stuff, but let's get to the point. What happened?
Well, what happened is when we came back from the camp, we were getting ready to lights off when the barracks light started flickering on and off, like strobe lights, and we all thought, well, something's happening for sure. We thought it was electric company or something, and it wasn't, because it was so strange the way it was flickering off and on, and like somebody was in charge of the light bulb or light switch, mm-hmm. and all of us just kind of got our gears and put our gears on and equipment and web belt and everything. By then, we were starting to walk away from the buildings, because that was the most strangest part. And we noticed suddenly that when we started walking down the hill, there was a Jeep where a General Livesey showed up. And we told General Livesey, something unusual is happening here, and we're seeing this happening right now. And he told us and commanded us to go back up the hill and take control of the situation, so we did that. By now, this pretty much we got the command talking to us on radio we found, and we were talking to one of the guys who was in charge of this. They told us to get all the choppers ready and call the choppers in and find out what's going on with this, because we can hear the general in the background saying, this is an alert, alert. So we got alert, and everybody started packing our weapons and ammo, and guys, next thing we know is that the same thing showed up again. This light, intense bluish light. We started firing at it. We didn't know what it was. It started firing back at us.
What was it shooting?
Several times over.
What was it firing?
I'm sorry?
What was it firing?
It was firing a white ball light. Kind of small white ball light. At
okay.
all of us. When that happened, it burned. It burned us.
Did you get hit?
I almost fired back.
Did you get hit?
Yeah, I got hit. Right on my right leg.
Uh-huh.
Back of my calf.
And it burned you?
For about an hour.
Okay. And so how many men are involved in this?
There was about the same amount of men that was at the brigade or battalion. 1,300 men out there.
1,300 men, okay. And so what happens?
Well, we got into a sort of a gun battle because we needed, we requested choppers, and the choppers are showing up. And suddenly they were firing at this object that was in the sky, and also we're firing on the ground because they're saying, hey, we see something. We have binoculars, too, and we've seen a lot of these, I don't know, it's like figures, but they're moving so fast, like 1 minute, they're second, they're there next, 1 second, they're there, next second, they're gone. And they're moving between the trees, so this they're kind of disappearing and moving around. And we started firing at them. We started firing at them, they fired back.
What did they shoot?
White balls of light.
And did any of these creatures that you were shooting at get hit?
I'm sure we hit a lot of them up there. I'm sure of that. Nothing happened to them.
So if you hit, you shoot them and hit them, it didn't do anything to them?
It knocked them down.
And then they got back up and they're back in action?
They got right back up and kind of floated back, floated back. They were like an inch and a half or 2 inches off the ground and just cruised around. They just moved around really fast that way.
All right, so we have helicopters that show up and they're firing at this blue, white, whitish, bluish, 600-foot long object. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to find out what happens to the helicopters. We will be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, John Vasquez. And we're talking about probably one of the most astounding stories of an event involving a UFO that you're ever going to hear. I doubt that anybody can point to a particular incident involving UFOs and say that's the one that's the biggest. That's the one that's the strangest. But this one ranks up there among them, and it involves a UFO incident, two UFO incidents. In September of 1977, John Vasquez says he was not only a witness, but an experiencer, a participant in this. And he says this happened at Fort Benning. Okay, John, so you shoot these guys, these creatures that you could see moving out in the woods. It would knock them down, but then they would get back up, and they're back in action. Helicopters show up. They're firing at this 600-foot-long, bluish-whitish glowing object that's hovering above all of this activity. What happens when they shoot at this object? Does it have any effect on the object?
No, because we were using what we had back in 1977, a weapon called the TOW and the Dragon. It's shoulder held, or it could be placed on beeps. It's like a bazooka sort of look, and very powerful weapon that can, you know, destroy anything. And this object just didn't phase the explosion at all. It's very strange. I mean, it was the most unusual experience I ever felt when this was going on, because at that time the Dragon and the TOW was the most powerful weapon we had.
Okay. All right. So the helicopters are firing either Dragon or TOW missiles at the object, right?
Yes.
The object is not being affected by it. Does it fire back at the helicopters?
Yes, of course it did. And it burned. What happened is it dropped three helicopters. And the three helicopters that was dropped and was burning was a UH-1H Huey chopper. The other one was a Bell 26B. And the third one was CH-46 helicopter. Those helicopters were burning. And we know that some of the pilots didn't make it.
All right, now the CH, that's, is that a Chinook?
I believe it is a Chinook.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this is where, folks, I mean, I know you're listening to this, and some of you are saying, can't be. But I'll tell you this now. I did a show about UFO battles with between the UFOs and the U.S. military in Vietnam, and I quoted a general who said it happened. And that's up on YouTube, and there are comments where, you know, people, oh, that's nonsense, that blah, 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 blah. But you read all the comments, and you'll see some comments from people who said, yeah, we used to get involved in this kind of stuff frequently in Vietnam. I saw it happen. So sometimes what sounds too fantastic to be true just may be. This is where some of the new evidence comes in. It isn't new, but it's newly discovered by John, and that is a newspaper article that was published on September 17th. On the night of September 16th is when this all takes place, and on September 17th, an article gets published. John, who published the article?
It was called The Bayonet, and it was published on September 16, 1977.
Okay, so it was published on the 16th.
Yes, sir.
Well, if this happened on the night of the 16th, how could they have published it before it happened?
No, what happened is that we had an incident on the 6th, which was the part where all of us were taken, and the 16th happened when it was also the information was given out earlier, that because of the fact that there were a field practice going on at the same time too in the morning.
Okay, here's my question, John. If this battle takes place on the night of the 16th and this article is published on the 16th, they could not have reported the battle.
Well, actually, why it was published on the 16th, and the battle was also on the 16th, is because they had the news already given out on the 16th.
Yeah, but you can't report the news before it happens, John.
Well, you know, I know it sounds kind of unusual, but that's what I'm reading right now on a piece of paper, and I can read it to you.
Okay, go ahead.
And the paper says, participating in a week-long TOW and Dragon gunner's course following completion of the infantry AIT, Private Joe and Trucks, yeah, Private Joe, tracks his target using a dragon simulator and training ammunition at a parry range. Killer.
Okay, so they're just reporting that there's this test going on, this training course with TOW missiles and Dragon missiles.
Yeah, they're just reporting it and made it report earlier than on the 16th.
All right, but what about the report about helicopters crashing?
The helicopter crashing was also reported on the same time on the 16th. That's when this incident did occur on the second time around. And have these choppers...
All right, now let me clarify something. When I say what date was it reported, I mean what date was that published?
On the newspaper?
Yes.
Well, the newspaper was published a week early, so you figure it's about, the 9th.
So how can they report on the 9th about something that took place on the 16th?
Well, they have the paperwork right here. I have the paperwork right here.
All right. Okay, John, listen. How could they know there's going to be this battle with the UFO on the 16th? How could they know there's going to be three helicopters downed, and on the 9th they report about what didn't happen until the 16th?
That's what I read on this article that I've been reading, and I may be reading it the wrong article, but I got the information about the date and time, so I'm just reading what I can. And the article I have right here in front of me, that's what it says, September 16, 1977. And it was at Fort Benning, Georgia. So whoever wrote that article, I'm just reading what I can and trying to find out more information about this.
Yeah. I think one thing that we can say is the news cannot be reported before it happens, unless you're mainstream media and you're making the stories happen. It's not possible for them to have written all of this on the 9th and printed it before it happened. It's just not possible that they could have known that this battle took place when it had not yet taken place.
Well, the battle did take place on the 16th. That's when I was there also with the rest of the military personnel, and on the 2nd, that's when this whole thing started. And as for the paper is concerned, I wish I could write more paperwork and at least tell them the truth and get out the information with which would be written. It would be much more better than figuring it out myself.
Okay, well, you see what I'm saying, though. If the paper is published on the 9th, distributed on the 16th, and the battle didn't take place till the night of the 16th, there's no way they could have reported on a battle that had not taken place at the time they produced the paper. You see that?
Okay, well, I don't want to sound like I'm making up a story, but I have this story written down, and maybe I've written down at a wrong date. I don't think so, but if you feel that the date is wrong, I'm sorry. I'm doing my best to gather all the evidence I can at this point.
Yeah, and I'm trying to help you sort it.
Yeah.
We have to take a break, and we'll be back with some information based on the conversation I had. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, John Vasquez. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you are here, And my sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour. As we went away for break, we were talking about some controversy here about some dates and a newspaper report. John, is there any possibility that you have the date of the incident wrong? Maybe the date of the incident was on the 15th.
Yes, that's true. That's true. It's been a while. I really looked into myself about the book I wrote, and at times I do skip and forget about exactly what took place, and not exactly, but the memory comes back and tells me these things did happen. But then when it comes to the exact date, I know that the exact date I have was on the 2nd, because that's when we were in formation. As for the second time around at this object show, that's when things started happening. Something wild started happening to all of us.
All right, so do you think that this happened, this second incident, September 15th, or do you think it happened on the 16th? Because when you and I talked about this newspaper report, you were telling me that the newspaper came out on the 17th.
That's right. I was saying the 17th. That's right, the 17th. I want to have this clear. That's why at times, I overlooked the information, and I apologize. I'm just a regular person. I'm not a news reporter or someone who's in charge of ABC News or something like that.
Well, I understand that, but the date's important. The date of that newspaper article is important, because if the incident took place on the 16th and the paper was published on the 16th, then whatever that paper's talking about, it's not talking about this incident, because they could not have reported it before it happened.
Exactly. So it's my mistake. I'm not perfect. I do make mistakes when it comes to the exact information. That's why I'm requesting another book to be written, so I have all the exact information.
All right. I want us to talk about something I know for sure. You mentioned to me several names of officers who, and that includes non-commissioned officers, who were there, who were present when this happened. You provided me with a telephone number of one of these guys, who is now a command sergeant major. At the time, he was not. At the time, he was a sergeant. But he is today a command sergeant major. And I telephoned him and talked with him, and I'm not going to give his name, and there's a reason why I'm not going to give his name, folks. You will hear. Okay. I asked him if he knew about you and knew about your account of this incident, and he said yes. And I asked him, was he at Fort Benning at the time that this incident is alleged to have happened? And he said yes. And I asked him, what did he remember of the incident? And he said he didn't remember anything about this incident. But then he said something pretty curious. He said, but I'll tell you, there is something strange about this. And I said, well, what's that? And he said, well, John Vasquez wrote to the Army asking for information about certain things related to this incident. And in writing to them, he told them that he was there, he was in Delta 1-1, which was a unit, and that he was there at this time, and that this incident happened, and could they provide certain information. And he said the Army responded to him that no such unit was there at that time. And he said, But I know that unit was there because I was in that unit and I was there. So they're telling you that your unit wasn't there. Here's a command sergeant major who says, okay, look, I don't remember the incident, but I was there. I was in Delta 1-1, and they're saying we weren't there. And that is curious. And I know he said this because he said it to me. And that is very, very curious that the very presence of Delta 1-1 at Fort Benning at this particular time is being denied. So then the question is, why would they deny that Delta 1-1 was there? Is it because Delta 1-1 is the 1,300 guys involved? And I'm asking you, John, is Delta 1-1, is that the 1,300 people who were involved?
Yes, the 1,300 men.
So Delta 1-1 had 1,300 men in it?
Yes, it did. Yeah, four companies.
Okay, so I'm talking with a command sergeant major, and for people who are outside of the U.S., and you may not be familiar with that, we have enlisted men and we have officers. Among enlisted men, the highest rank you can get to is command sergeant major. It is a non-commissioned officer rank. And it's very, very powerful. So here's a command sergeant major telling me on the telephone about, he's the one, I didn't even know about Delta 1. I had to ask him. He said, they told John that Delta 1-1 was not there. And I said, what is a Delta 1-1? And he explained to me, well, that's the unit that we were in. And he said, they told John Delta 1-1 was not there at that time. And I know Delta 1-1 was there because I was in Delta 1-1 and I was there. So the Army has denied to you the existence of Delta 1-1 at Fort Benning at this time. So that's a real eyebrow raiser right there. Now, there is something else, and John, you came up with this and posted it on my Facebook wall, and that is an account of a MUFON investigation of UFO sighting and possible crash in 1977. The witness's name is published here, let me explain. I did not use this command sergeant major's name because he has not come out and said, yes, this incident happened. If he goes public with it, I'll use his name. But since he has not gone public with it, I'm not going to use his name. And all he has done, though, is he brought up the thing about them denying that Delta 1-1 was at Fort Benning at the time in question, and he confirmed to me that he was in Delta 1-1 and that Delta 1-1 was there at Fort Benning at the time that you're talking about this incident happening. Now back to the MUFON report, ladies and gentlemen. This MUFON report, if you go to my Facebook wall, you'll see where John Vasquez has put the link there. It names the witness in this case. Her name is Carolyn Shelnut. And she says that sometime in late 1977 or early 1978, she stepped out of her house near Corinth, which is in western Georgia, near sundown, and glanced up to see a great metallic boomerang flying toward the southeast at about 1,000 miles an hour. After several seconds, a brilliant flash came from this UFO, and immediately it fell below the horizon. She ran into the house, hustled her three children into the car, and drove toward where the object had disappeared. At dusk, she saw smoke rising from the road of, it's a Georgia State Highway 100. In her excitement, she ran off the road and ran into the ditch with her car. So they flagged down another car, and Shelnut's husband, who operated a service station, was alerted. Mr. Shelnut arrived, pulled the car, his wife's car, out of the ditch, and everybody went home. Miss Shelnut and the others got into her husband's truck and drove to the New River Crossing. About 1,000 feet to the west, they observed several helicopters flying about at low altitude and sweeping the ground with spotlights. There was smoke all over the place. It obscured the area. But the oldest child thought he could see a fire. Now, the MUFON investigator was found no one to corroborate this story. Now, this is important, folks. It's important because this may be related to what John's talking about, because it was late 1977 or early 78. So it could have been in the September corridor. But it's important for another reason. Here we have Miss Shelnut, mentioned by name, and involved in all of this, you have the family that she flagged down after she ran off into the ditch, and who then took her to her husband's service station, or alerted the service station. Maybe they called on a telephone. I don't know. So you've got them involved. You've got the husband who came to the scene involved. And you've got the children who were with their mom and saw the smoke, and they saw one of them a fire and saw the helicopters. So you have all of that, and then you have the MUFON investigator saying he could find nobody to corroborate the story. Does that mean that none of these other people would talk? Perhaps. Quite perhaps. That does happen, you know. And I know that with this story that John Vasquez has related to us and that he's written about, if this story is true, you've got a lot of people who are keeping their mouths welded shut. But there was just a little bit of a crack in the information. And that little bit of a crack was when I talked with this command sergeant major on the telephone, and he told me about the Army denying that Delta 11 was there. Delta 11 had 1,300 men in it. That's a significant number of men. Delta 11 was there, as is confirmed by this command sergeant major. And he said, I can't understand why they would say we weren't there. We were there. I was there at that time. So there's just a little bit of a crack in this. Now, there's some confusion with this newspaper story and the date on this newspaper story. And that's something John's going to investigate and clear up. It may or may not be related to his report of the incident. But don't you find it curious that the Army would deny that 1,300 men were there at that time? Now, James Norton also told us about the fact that a lot of the people that got hit by these white balls of light that were being fired by the, I will at this point say, aliens. I don't know that they are, but they're certainly not U.S. Army. These white balls of light that were fired, and some of the soldiers got hit. John got hit. James Norton said he got hit, and he said they got really sick after that. And they were kept in quarantine. Now, John, were you kept in quarantine after this?
Yes, the whole base was under quarantine after we got back to the base. Martin Army Hospital made sure that everybody had looked at by the doctors.
Did you get sick?
I'm sorry?
Did you get sick?
Yeah, I got hit.
No. I didn't ask if you got hit. I said, did you get sick?
Did I get sick? Yeah, I got sick.
What happened? Tell us about it.
I threw up. I threw up and I passed out for about 4 hours.
How long were you sick?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
How long were you sick?
How long? I think it was about a day or a couple of days.
There's a newspaper report in the local newspaper there just outside the base that this local newspaper reported that there was an epidemic an outbreak of measles on the base. And this was reported at right about that same time where you had a bunch of these guys being quarantined. But the local newspaper was told by the base public information officer that it was an outbreak of measles. So did you have the measles or was something else wrong with you?
Well, the information I received is that Columbus Health Department said that there was some kind of health problems, and we tried to find out more about it, and we also contacted Department of Health. They're telling us, or they were telling me, that there was some information about this, and then they said it was a measles outbreak, so I don't know, it just...
Well, I'm asking you, did you have the measles, or was there something else wrong with you?
I know I didn't have the measles. There was some reddish burn on our bodies, in my body, too, and the doctor there just said that it looks like measles, and it was burning. It was burning.
Uh-huh.
It looked like it. That's what I said. It looked like measles, but it wasn't. I know it wasn't.
And so this reddish burn and this area on your leg that he said looks like the measles, did that spread all over your body, or did it stay right there on your leg?
It stayed right on my right calf, and it was red. With
those spotches. Okay, well, measles would have spread all over your body. And so, I mean, that's kind of an indicator right there. Whatever it was, it wasn't the measles. So, all right, I want to allow the audience to join us. And, folks, if you have some questions or comments, or listen to me, because there are millions of you listening to this show right now. So listen carefully. In these millions, it's almost for sure that there's somebody that was in that 1300 Delta 11 at Fort Benning in 1977, September 1977. If you were there and you remember, we want you to call in. We want to hear from you. And for all of the audience, if you have a question, if you have a comment, we want to hear from you. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And if you are outside of the USA, if you're outside of Canada, then you can call us, or you can use our flash message option. The flash message option is really easy to use. Just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, and you'll see the picture about tonight's show. Right above that picture is a link that says flash message. You can click that and communicate with us that way as well. But if you're in the USA, if you're in Canada, we want you to give us a call. 623-444-5889. And again, I'm pretty sure that in this audience, there are some of the 1,300 who were there. You remember it. We would love to hear from you. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Joni from St. Louis.
Hi, Joni.
I just have a quick question statement. It sounds to me, from the history of our government in the past, that, you know, they have not stopped experimenting on their own service members. Could this possibly be an experiment with some kind of weaponry that got, you know, placed against their own men? And that's all I want to ask.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. So, John, what do you think? Do you think this was some type of United States military secret weaponry that was used against you guys?
Well, the information I have is that in this place where we're at, training, did have a female lieutenant come to us one day after the incident, and she wanted to talk to all of us. Well, all of us refused because we didn't know who she was, but we know she was an officer, a lieutenant. And she showed up with about six more other drill sergeants that we never seen before. And suddenly we got the word that she wants to talk to all of us, one by one. Well, one day I was walking down a stairway at the pool room, and one of my friends showed up with her, and she told him to walk away. Now, my friend would not have done that because he's a good friend and he would have said something to me, but she told him to leave, and he did. Right now she was walking up the stairway and I came down and I was going to shake her hands, and she took my left hand and pulled it to her, and I heard her say, "I'm going to hate myself to doing this," and the next thing I feel is a sharp jab, like a needle, my left hand, and I went under. She was asking all kinds of questions.
So
a lot of it personal.
So she.
The way I came out.
She gave you a shot of something that knocked you out.
Yeah, it had to be some kind of drug-induced hypnosis.
Okay.
It had to be. I was out for a while.
Would you recognize her if you saw her again?
I believe I can.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. See if you can find your phone, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, John Vasquez. John, as we went away for break, I asked you if this lieutenant, you extended your hand to this female lieutenant. She said, "I'm going to hate myself for this," took your hand and jabbed something into your arm. Is that right?
In my hand.
Into your hand.
Yeah, something in my hand, my left hand.
Okay, and then you're instantly out of it. And do you remember anything about what happened while you were out?
No, it's I was out. And, actually I hear her say that I'm going to wake you up in a few minutes or something like this. And she put her left finger on my left temple and her right finger on her right temple and squeezed real hard and told me that you're going to be waking up in a few minutes, and which I did. I jumped up, and she's standing right in front of me, and she's telling me, what are you doing here, you know? And I just answered back and said, I don't know, I mean, I'm waking up, you know, so she told me, leave. So I did. So it was quite quick.
And you think you would remember her if you were to see her now?
Yeah, she's very petite, blonde hair. I believe with blue eyes. And yeah, she was a second lieutenant.
What do you think happened to you while you were out?
Well, there was a question that was answered, or I was giving answering back to her. Some of the questions she asked was that if I remembered anything at all of the incident at Fort Benning, or what happened to us during this unusual event.
How are you able to remember what happened while you were under?
I was seeing pictures of myself. Well, actually, in my mind, I was seeing images, and it was coming to me. She was telling me, "What do you see? What do you see?" And my memory was giving me back a feedback, and I was answering the questions that she wanted to know.
Okay, so you're sort of, you've begun to experience some flashback memories to what was happening, is that right?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Do you think that every one of these 1,300 guys experienced that same thing?
I believe so. We're all there. Each and every one of us. And so with the sergeants, also the company commanders, they were all there.
Do you think they're beginning to have any flashback memories, John?
Do I have flashback memories? Sure. I have that flashback memory every time I think about this.
No, I ask you, do you think they are beginning to experience these flashback memories?
Well, that's a good question, because I haven't seen anybody or heard from anyone except for the sergeant major and the other sergeant major, two of them, and as for the colonel, too. I spoke to the colonel.
Was the colonel, what was, you've told me about this colonel before. Now, when this incident happened, was he out on the grounds with all these 1,300 guys? Was he present on the grounds?
Yes, sir. He was out there because he was a captain then.
Okay.
And he saw.
What did he tell you? When you talked with him, what did he say?
Exactly what he told me when I first spoke to him, when I met, or actually back in, 3 months, 4 months ago, back, I spoke to him about if he does remember anything at all about this incident, and then I wrote a book on it, and he pretty much kind of went and said that it's has to be something else. I forgot, I can't remember right now. It was something else that he was telling me, and it had to do with the incident itself. He wasn't specific about what part of the incident was.
So, make me understand. He said that yes, he remembered it, or no, he did not remember it.
He didn't give out a precise answer to that. The information I was gathering is that he knew that Fort Benning did exist, and that's where the incident itself. I asked him, "Do you remember?" And he just told me, nothing really. He just kind of quieted down and said something else, and I didn't hear it.
Okay, so now you've talked to the command sergeant major that I've talked to, right?
Yes.
And you've talked to another guy who was a sergeant at the time, and What did he say?
Well, what did he say? That all of us did exist, or were there at Fort Benning, Georgia. And that's where the other part of it, of what took place, was this battle and other things that was going on. And he just flat out said, no, I don't remember any of that at all. But he does remember that there was the 1st Battalion Post and the 1st Battalion, yeah, 1st Battalion Post and certain things about the 1st Battalion Post.
Okay, so he remembers being there. Did he remember you being there?
Yes, he remembers. I asked him, do you remember me and do you remember what happened? And he said, I remember who you are. I remember the 1st Battalion Post. But as for the other thing that we're talking about, this bizarre, unusual thing happening to us, I don't remember that at all. That's what he's telling me.
And
it sounds like catch-22 to me.
Yeah. Well, see, now you and I have talked about this, so this is not a surprise to you. But I'm going to say something, and then I'm going to provide a caveat to it. With
Kevin,
one,
I'm sorry to interrupt, Kevin, but I can't hear you at all. You're
there's not a thing I can do about that. All right. So now the. You're one guy out of 1,300 guys, and you're the only one that apparently that remembers this. So that would, I think, for most people would say, okay, only one guy remembers this. There's 1,300, and nobody else is remembering it. So maybe this one guy has something going on with his memory that's not right. Except, folks, when I talked with this command sergeant major, he said, yeah, I was there, and I am familiar with John's story. I don't remember it happening. But then he said, but there is something strange about this. And I said, yeah, what's that? And then he tells me about the document you have, John, from the Army, where they deny that Delta 1-1 was at Fort Benning at this time. And he said, well, that's strange. I said, well, what's a Delta 1-1? He said, well, that's the name of the unit. And he said, I know Delta 1-1 was there because I was in Delta 1-1, and I was there. And he said, I don't understand why they would say that we weren't there. We were there. And once we put that in the mix, now it gets pretty curious, doesn't it, folks? I don't know really what it all says when it all comes out in the wash at the end, and it will eventually all come out in the wash at the end. But it's very curious to me that here we've got a guy that remembers something excessively odd, really, really strange, happening at Fort Benning, September 1977. We have people in the surrounding area seeing UFOs at that period of time. We have a witness who's reported to MUFON seeing one of those UFOs go down at that period of time. And then we have the U.S. Army saying to document to John Vasquez that Delta 1-1 was not at Fort Benning. So they took the whole 1,300 guys and said they weren't there. And I've got a command sergeant major who says, yeah, by golly, we were there. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
While you was aboard that ship, I've been listening, but I don't remember if you said, what did they, you know, do to you on that ship?
They did all kinds of experimental things to us, which was really sick, bizarre. Yeah. Sometimes I get talking about this, it's just frightening. I get frightened. We were frightened because of the way these things looked.
And this lady that stuck you with that needle, did you see her after you came, after you came to?
When she stuck me with that needle, the lieutenant, when I came to, I just popped up and she sat in front of me, and the next thing she said to me was what are you doing here? And I just looked at her and leave. So I had to leave. I did leave. I ran back.
And with this lady, would you be able to get in contact with that lady now?
I tried once, and all I got is the last name, Richards. That's it. Her name was Richards.
And how about the your other friends or people that were there? Do they, and possibly Kevin, the guy that you talk with, does he know who this lady is?
Which Kevin is that? Kevin, are you talking about Kevin Smith?
Yeah, Kevin here, Smith.
Yeah, I just told him, I told Kevin Smith the name of the person and what happened when this lieutenant was giving me this drug-induced hypnosis.
No, John, his question is, would any of these people that you've been in touch with, would they know how to get in touch with Lieutenant Richards?
No, I don't think so. No. No. My answer is no. Because that's the first time, that wasn't so long ago, back in 96, when we found the last name Richards.
Well, wouldn't the Army somehow, they'd have to have a record of her, correct?
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do. But I mean, I'm so involved with this story for a very long time. I didn't kind of backtrack or anything like that to look into her, too. But I'm sure there's records of her at Army Intelligence Fort Meade, Maryland.
Okay.
Rusty, do you remember when I did the shows with Command Sergeant Major James Norton?
Yes.
One of the things that he said is, that now they're denying everything, but he said, I have my medical records that show what happened. All right, we have to go. It's time for a break. Rusty, thanks for the call.
All right, thanks.
We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach. My guest this evening is John Vasquez. John, we only have a few minutes left, so let me ask you are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, okay, good. I couldn't tell from the phone system. Okay, so let me ask you this. How many men were injured in this battle?
Well, a lot of us were injured because of the fact that we're sent back in our ambulance, and the ambulance or one of the trucks, and I remember one of the sergeants was telling us to go back, go back, just get in the truck, go back, and which we did, and we're sent to Martin Army Hospital.
All right, when you say a lot of us were injured, how many is a lot?
I see about, 100 people, maybe more.
And all of them had these same burn marks on them?
Reddish burn mark with yellow splotches.
And when you got hit with this strange ball of light and it hit you in the calf on your leg, did it do any damage to your uniform? Did it put a hole in your uniform?
No, it didn't. No, it didn't.
So while you were in the hospital, what kind of treatment did you get? What were they doing to you in the hospital?
Well, they wrapped me up with a gauze. That's what they did. Just plain gauze.
Your whole body?
No, my right leg.
Okay. And what symptoms did you have? Did you have a fever? Did you have chills? Or just the burning sensation? What happened?
I had fever. I had I was traumatized for what happened. And the people who was around me, the other rest of us, was screaming out loud, you know, what's going on? And we're hurt, we're burned. We went, and the doctors are telling us it's measles. That's what they're saying. We just can't believe what the doctors were saying. I mean, they called that measles, so I didn't believe it.
Uh-huh. Well, we've given the other 1,300, we put the call out for the other 1,299 to give us a call tonight, and we've gotten the same response that you've gotten over the years. And that is, none of them have stepped up and said, yeah, I remember this part of it, or I remember that part of it. How does that make you feel when that happens?
What I remember, it keeps me going. It motivates me because I know it happened, and I'm not making up this story, because if the rest of the crew, if the rest of the sergeants and officer were there, I know that the officer knows about what happened too. That's not imaginary people that I'm thinking about.
No, they're not imaginary people. I've talked to one of them. As a matter of fact, Stanton Friedman has also talked to that same one. And so he's very real. He does exist. And he pointed out the very strange situation of the U.S. Army claiming that this unit was not even at Fort Bragg. Fort Benning. Not Fort Bragg. Fort Benning. At this particular period of time. And he told me, yes, we were. I was there. I know we were there. And, I don't know why they would say we weren't there. So that's very strange. In answer to Rusty's question about, you know, wouldn't the Army have records on this lady, this lieutenant? They would, but then again, there's, you know, if she was part of the debriefing and getting all of this information that they felt like was so secret they had to wipe the memory from these guys, if that's what was going on, then there is absolutely no assurance that her name is Richards. It could be anything. I mean, I worked with a guy named Fred one time who I'm absolutely certain was not Fred. But that's the name we knew him by. So, it's a big, big mess. And it's a ball of confusion when you dig into it and try to unravel it and try to get to the truth of what happened. So, John, let me ask you this. If nobody, I said at the beginning of the show that truth is not a majority vote. It is what it is. So if nobody ever steps up and says, yeah, it happened, what will be your response? What will you do if nobody ever steps up and says it happened?
Well, my answer would be, it's ridiculous. I mean, I've worked at this story for the last 33 years, and I made sure that each part of the story was a story that all of us went through. And I made sure that the response would be always the same, nothing changed or altered. And that right now with command, with the sergeants, both of the sergeants explained to me that these things did happen or did not happen, and somebody is not working in the same field here. I know that the military does have a lot of psychops and all this other programs going on every time to give the person a ridiculous response to the person himself, and letting everybody know that maybe definitely it was not UFO and it was some kind of mind-altering drug-induced hypnosis. Now, these things are always happening every day.
Do you think that's what happened here? Do you think that perhaps there was no UFO, but that you were subjected to some type of mind-altering drug as a test?
Well, I have, again, I wanted to get this information from one of the drill sergeants, Dave Norton, about this, but, you know, he passed away. And what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
He had wanted that information about the metal pieces.
Well, we can say that James Norton said, he stepped up and said, yes, it happened. I was there, and I was injured, and it happened just like John described it. And he said that he was injured and that he still had his medical records to prove it. And he said, you know, what are they going to say about that? He said, I've got copies of the medical records that prove it. Unfortunately, as you say, he has passed away mysteriously. Okay, John, stay on the phone with me for a moment as I bring this one in for a close. Tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about the biggest news in the solar system right now, and that is the landing of the NASA Mars Curiosity rover on Mars, successfully landed last evening. Leave your telephones turned off tomorrow night. Mind you. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.